On January 13, 2011, at Winnipeg's Millennium Library, Amnesty International hosted a public forum on challenging China's human rights. David Matus, human rights lawyer and activist, presented on trafficking and harvesting of human organs, the persecution of practitioners of Falun Gong, and the controversial exhibit Bodies the Exhibition.
This was billed as an event talking about harvesting of human organs, persecution of Falun Gong practitioners, and the Bodies exhibition at the MTS Center in Winnipeg. So I thought I'd kind of talk about that in reverse order. I'll talk first about the Bodies exhibition, and then persecution of Falun Gong, and then the harvesting of organs. The Bodies exhibit has been in the media this past week, and I've been involved in that, and there's been some more activity today, so I thought it might be useful just to recap all that. I suppose most of you know what the Bodies exhibit is, but it's a touring group that has plasticized or plastinated bodies. It's got an exhibition at the MTS Center, their exhibition hall on Portage Avenue. It's been there, I believe, since September now. It's been there for a few months, and it's finishing this Sunday, and they're leaving on Wednesday. I had originally, when it first came, protested its arrival and objected to its being here. But that didn't go very far, and Judith will talk a little bit more about the protests. More recently, as it was about to leave, I wrote to the Minister of Health and asked her to deny permission to the exhibit to leave, because it was my reading of the Anatomy Act that she had the power to do so. The minister took the position that the act didn't apply to bodies that of people who died out of the province, and I disagreed with that interpretation. The letter that I wrote got a lot of publicity, as a result of which there was a lot of public interest in the issue, and an organization called Coalition to Investigate Persecution Against the Falun Gong, a Canadian branch, they instructed a lawyer, Norman Boudreau, to challenge in court, by way of judicial review, the decision of the minister that she did not have jurisdiction to deal with the issue. And that challenge was heard in a preliminary way today in court, and I was actually there substituting a bit for Norman Boudreau because he couldn't show up on time, and so I covered for him until he showed up. The people who organized the Bodies exhibit, they're called Premier Exhibition Company, they're headquartered in Atlanta. They sent their own lawyer and applied to intervene. We started discussing whether they should intervene and what intervener status they should get, and we ended up having a conference amongst the lawyers. The company, Premier Exhibitions in Atlanta, announced on Tuesday that they were stopping this tour, this exhibit. They were just not going to show plastinated bodies on exhibit anymore, anywhere, they said, because they weren't making money out of it. That was their position. As a result of which, Norman Boudreau divided his application in two. The original application was a challenge of the decision of the minister, but also asking the court to stop the exhibit from leaving. Until the decision was made. And he was interested, and I was interested in stopping the exhibit from leaving to stop further exhibitions. And once the company itself had decided to stop further exhibitions, that didn't seem so necessary. It didn't seem so necessary to get a court order to do it, to stop the bodies from leaving. So Boudreau abandoned the part of the application which asked the court to order the bodies not to leave, and just continued with the part of the application asking for the challenge of the minister's decision that there's no jurisdiction. And after that, the lawyer representing the exhibition said that they're postponing, not withdrawing, but postponing their application for intervention status. And then the whole thing was adjourned to another date. So that's sort of where the matters stand now, where there's this pending court action to determine whether or not the minister was right in her statement. There's nothing she could do about it. Bodies, the exhibition itself, will probably leave, and probably, I don't know exactly when they're ending business. They may have something lined up which they've already committed to, but because the newspaper report about the decision to end the business didn't say exactly when it was going to end, but there is this decision to end it. So that's kind of a brief overview of the bodies exhibit. But let me work backwards from that. I got involved in this issue because of my interest in the persecution of Falun Gong, and in particular the killing of Falun Gong for their ordinance. And that goes back a few years now. There was a woman named Annie in March 2006, which is almost 5 years ago now, who made a public statement in Washington, D.C., that her ex-husband was a surgeon in China, and between 2003 and 2005, he had been harvesting the organs of corneas of Falun Gong practitioners, that these corneas were being sold to transplant tourists, that other surgeons in the hospital where he worked in Sujiaten in China were harvesting other organs, and the Falun Gong practitioners were being killed through this organ extraction, and then their bodies were cremated. The government of this statement of Annie's, it was a public statement, got some publicity, and then it was denied by the government of China. And the Coalition to Investigate Persecution Against the Falun Gong, the American branch, or the global branch, which is headquartered in Washington, D.C., asked me and David Kilgore to investigate whether Annie's statement was true and to get some sort of resolution of the controversy between her and the government of China. The organization didn't give us any instructions, didn't give us any money, and didn't give us, they gave us a bit of data, but not much, and basically just left us on our own. We agreed to do it, well, and I in particular agreed to do it, because of my involvement in human rights, and because of my involvement in the human rights NGO world, and I realize there are some limitations to the human rights organizational world. What Luis Simbandugwe said was, in fact, quite true, that Amnesty International, it collects a number of people who are outraged about human rights violations and want to do something about it. But that wasn't what we were dealing with here, because Amnesty International tends to focus on verifiable information which generates widespread concern and tries to mobilize that concern. It has a research component, but it's not a research organization. It's primarily a campaign organization with research and support. But what we had here was essentially a research issue, not a campaign issue. Was this happening or was it not? Now, David Kilgore and I didn't have any views when we started, and we were as happy, would have in fact been happier to disprove rather than prove what Annie had said. But it represented an evidentiary conundrum because we didn't have any corpses, we didn't have any witnesses, everything happened in an operating room, we didn't have a crime scene, the operating room would have been cleaned up afterwards, we didn't have any documents because the documents would have been hospital records to which we didn't have access. So there wasn't the obvious evidentiary indicators that would allow us easily to come to a conclusion, yes, this was happening or no, this wasn't happening. So we tried to develop evidentiary indicators to try to figure out whether this was or was not happening. And we came to the conclusion, eventually, that this was indeed happening, not just in Sujiaten, but throughout China, not just for corneas, which Annie's husband was harvesting, but for all organs, not just from 2003 to 2005, but from 2001 to the date we wrote our report. The first version of our report came out in July 2006. The second version of our report came out in January 2007, and they're both available on the internet. We have a website at organharvestinvestigation.net. We did a third version in book form under the title Bloody Harvest, which came out in November 2009 and brought the situation up to date. And over the course of the years, the situation changed considerably. The transplant tourism market went way down, and there's much more transplants going to Chinese nationals than there are to tourists when we started. But the problem for the Falun Gong has increased. Falun Gong is a set of exercises with a spiritual foundation, which was started in China in 1992. It's kind of a modernization and blending of the Qigong exercise traditions, the Buddhist and Taoist traditions. And it grew from a standing start in 92 in China to, according to government of China estimates, between 70 and 100 million people in 1999. The government was doing a survey of non-governmental activity, and that's what they came up with for Falun Gong. And at that point, and it was throughout the party, and it was throughout the country. There were 3,000 practice stations in Beijing, and the party took ideological fright, fright about its ideological supremacy in the country, because at that time there were more Falun Gong practitioners than there were members of the Communist Party of China. At that time, it was 60 million people. So they banned. They banned the practice of Falun Gong in 1999. A rough equivalent to Falun Gong is yoga, which has also got both a spiritual and exercise component. Anyhow, it was banned in 99, and the initial banning didn't have much of an impact. It just led to a lot of protests. The banning was by the party was in June 99 and by the government in July 99. So by November 99, they could see the banning wasn't going very far. So they increased the level of repression. Basically, they had a party meeting in November where they told the cadres bankrupt them, destroy their reputations, and destroy them physically. At this point, the people who were arrested were asked to recant and signed recantation statements. If they did, they were released. If they didn't, they were tortured. If they recanted after torture, they'd be released. And if they didn't recant after torture, they just disappeared into the Chinese re-education through labor system, the detention system. They quickly became the number one torture victims in China. According to the UN rapporteur on torture, there are 2/3 of the torture victims in China. The Uyghurs are 11%, and everybody else is single digits. And they quickly became the majority of the re-education through labor camps, which have been numbered by various NGOs in the high hundreds of thousands or in the millions. So there's huge numbers of these people in the re-education through labor camps. Many of them, of course, did recant through torture, but many of them did not. David Kilgore and I have interviewed many people who've been released from these Chinese labor camps and released from China, and they're all recantation people. People who identified themselves. But there was what they tell us is a large number of people who were in these prisons that were also Falun Gong practitioners who didn't identify themselves, didn't recant, and just disappeared. And in fact, they were more numerous than the people who did identify themselves. So what happened to all these people? Well, it's the view of David Kilgore and myself that one thing that happened to them was that they were being killed for their organs. Now, the Chinese organ transplant business is a very gruesome business. The standard sources of organs everywhere else in the world are donors and accident victims. The brain dead, cardiac alive. In China, neither of those sources are available. They just set up a donation system last year as a pilot project in 10 cities, but up to then there was no donation system. If you came to a hospital with a relative and you wanted to donate, they take the donation, but there was no place where you could actually say, I want to donate. And actually, sourcing from the brain dead cardiac alive was and is still illegal, so the traditional sources in China are not available. China has a very high death penalty, which is very much a concern of Amnesty International. And what China started doing is using death penalty prisoners as sources for transplants. When they first started transplants, that's where the transplants came from. The law in 1984 in China actually allowed for the use of organs for transplants without the consent of the prisoner, as long as the body was unclaimed by the family. They developed this kind of business between the prisons and the hospitals. The hospitals would go to the prisons for organs. Now, at the same time as the organ trade was developing, China was shifting from socialism to capitalism, which it means that they were taking the government was taking money out of the health system, and the health system had to fend for itself by charging for services, and so the primary way they started to earn money to keep their doors open was by selling organs for transplant globally. And China became the number one global destination for transplant tourists. There was price lists posted on a Chinese national website as well as hospital websites. There were short waiting times being boasted about on hospital websites. And the short waiting times themselves meant that people were being killed for their organs because there was no other way that you could deliver short waiting times. There's no organ matching distribution system in China, which means that there's a lot of organ wastage and that people are being killed for one organ or at most for two. There isn't sort of very efficient use of organs. And we talked to many patients, and patients, there wasn't any coordination between various patients in terms of getting organs, which suggests there wasn't much in the way of multiple organ usage, and patients could more or less go when they want and get whatever organs they wanted. So they developed this trade in organs of prisoners sentenced to death. The official Chinese line initially was everything came from donations, even though there was no donation system. But eventually they started to acknowledge that organs were coming from prisoners. Now they say that virtually all comes from prisoners. And what's more, they accept that it's wrong. They've now enacted a consent law saying that donors have to consent. But the transplant profession accepts that there's no meaningful consent in a prison setting and that you shouldn't be executing prisoners for organs. And the Chinese government says, yes, that's right, we shouldn't be, and eventually we'll get off it. Just give us time. We've got to develop our donation system. We've got to legislate about the brain dead, cardiac alive, and eventually we will. David Kilburn and I have said, well, okay, it's all coming from prisoners. We're agreed with that with the Chinese government, but it's not all coming from prisoners sentenced to death and then executed, because the Falun Gong practitioners are not sentenced to death. Some of them are sentenced to 3 years. That's the maximum they usually get, but many of them are sentenced to nothing. They're just rounded up, asked to recant, and kept in jail if they're not. And even if they get a three-year sentence, they're not released after the 3 years unless they recant. And what they're sentenced for is disrupting social order or something like that. It's not a real offense in a meaningful way. But one of the things we could see, I mean, there's a number of different indicators we had about the problem and how we came to the conclusion we did, and it would obviously take me far too long to go through all our evidence, but let me just mention one, which is the numbers. We could see a high volume of transplants in China because the Chinese government doesn't publish death penalty statistics, but it does publish transplant statistics. And the numbers in China for transplants are huge. At the time we were doing our report, about 10,000 a year of various organs. It was number one in the world after the United States. And so where were all these transplants coming from? The execution rate would have to be about 30,000 people a year to supply all the organs that the Chinese government was producing. China has a high execution rate, but it's nowhere near that. Amnesty International estimates that it may be, for the period we're looking at, between 1250 and 1500. Now, the Amnesty International estimate is almost surely too low because all what they're doing is they're collecting articles from newspapers and tabulating newspaper reports of executions. That's undoubtedly an underestimate, but it's not an underestimate by 15-20 times. And so the question was, where does this come from? Now, this matter we raised this, David Kilburn and I, in a number of different places. And one of the places we raised it with was the United Nations Rapporteur on Torture, who had been to China and was very concerned about the torture practitioners of Falun Gong. And so he raised the matter with the Chinese government. He says, could you explain the discrepancy between the volume of transplants and the volume of sources, the volume of sources you acknowledge meaning death penalty candidates. And the Chinese government's response was, well, we do not produce statistics by treatment. And therefore, any statistics you have about the value of transplants are a fabrication, which I and David Kilgour have produced. I mean, they said this, and Manfred Nowak, the rapporteur on torture, put in his report, at the same time as the people we were quoting maintained their statements and maintained them on Chinese websites. And then, of course, they continued to produce the same statistics since. So it was just kind of utter nonsense. It was kind of a taunt at the rapporteur rather than an answer saying to him, you know, we can say whatever you want, whatever we want, and there's nothing you can do about it. But it, of course, it wasn't a meaningful answer. The new rapporteur on torture is now Juan Mendez, and Manfred Nowak has finished his term, and Juan Mendez is in Washington, D.C., and I went to see him recently, and I said to him, keep this going, because the Chinese government has not given you a satisfactory answer, so we'll see what he says. But anyhow, what I could see is that the Chinese prison system and the Chinese hospital system was selling bodies for transplants for money. And I figured, well, if they're selling bodies for money for transplants, they could just as equally be selling bodies for money for plastination. The bodies exhibition, they acknowledge that the bodies come from China. They cannot verify the sources. They say the bodies have been given to them by the police, by the state system. And I was concerned that there is a real possibility that these bodies are coming from Falun Gong practitioners, which the way we worked out the numbers are a much more important source of organs for transplants than prisoners sentenced to death. Seemed to me that it wasn't my job to prove that that was the source of the organs. It was rather the job of the bodies exhibition to prove that their source was a consenting voluntary source. And that they acknowledged they could not do. And that generated the opposition that I had to this exhibit, which led to all the activity which I told you about at the beginning of my remarks. You know, what Luis said is quite true, that I have been heavily involved in Amnesty in the past, as a result of which I know a lot of Amnesty people around the world. And I've had some conversations with them about all this. And the Amnesty International is opposed to the death penalty, it's opposed to torture of the Falun Gong. On this particular issue, I would say it varies from place to place. Amnesty International New Zealand has been particularly strong on this issue, but there hasn't been a consistent approach. The Chinese government is very hostile to the Falun Gong. I mean, this is something that really surprised me, the extent of their hostility. I could give a whole talk about that. I mean, just to give you one idea, like a couple months ago, I was in Brisbane speaking on this issue, and offices of the host of the organization which invited me was shot at. And then there was bullet holes in the windows and so on. It's a form of intimidation, but that's an extreme incident, but there's lots of minor incidents. But we talked to defectors from embassies, and they put more staff, more time, more money into Falun Gong than anything else. This is the Chinese government's number one priority. If you talk to them about it, they don't want to talk about anything else. It just shuts down the conversation. And governments and NGOs have a tendency to say, well, let's talk about something else, because it's just a dead end talking about Falun Gong. And Amnesty International has a wide range of concerns, and there are areas where China is amenable to movement. And one of them is the death penalty, which is a very big concern of Amnesty. So there's been a tendency within Amnesty International to focus on the death penalty and focus less on the persecution of Falun Gong because of the sheer immobility of the Chinese government on the issue. And I would say that's generally the approach. But as I say, there is some variation and there is some internal discussion on the issue, and to a certain extent, I must say that I myself have fallen prey to the same temptation, because the Chinese government, although they will have nothing to do with Falun Gong, they, as I mentioned earlier, acknowledge that the sourcing of prisoners is wrong. So one of the tactics I've taken is said, well, okay, you think the sourcing of organs from prisoners is wrong? Well, if you stop sourcing organs from all prisoners, then you're going to stop sourcing of organs from Falun Gong practitioners. So why not just avoid the debate about the sourcing of organs from Falun Gong practitioners and just focus on the debate about sourcing of organs from prisoners, which to a certain extent would solve the problem that I've been focused on, which is the sourcing, the killing of Falun Gong practitioners for their organs. And if that worked, that would stop, but it wouldn't end the persecution of the Falun Gong, and so it still wouldn't be a completely satisfactory solution. This issue pops up in a lot of different ways. I mean, the bodies exhibit is one, but another issue is pharmaceutical companies doing trials in China for anti-rejection drugs. And many major pharmaceutical companies are in Switzerland. Some of them have said, we're not going to do trials in China, and others say, we will do trials in China. And it's like this bodies thing. There's more than one touring company, one of the touring companies has said we will not take bodies from China, but this group does. In fact, I don't know quite the history of this, but I recall reading that this group became an offshoot of the other one because the other one wouldn't take bodies from China, and this would. But I would say on the various facets of dealing with China on the issue of the bodies exhibit with pharmaceuticals, with the whole issue of whether this is happening, there's nothing very clear cut. I would say you've got different components saying different things, but no overall comprehensive statement. And that's where I'll stop. Okay, thanks.
I'm Alex Wenger reporting for CKUW 95.9. And we're back on People of Interest, CKUW 95.9, listener-driven alternative radio. I'm Alex, and this is
Sarah.
And you just listened to David Matus, human rights lawyer and activist, speaking last Thursday at Millennium Library on Chinese human rights. He talked about trafficking and harvesting of human organs. He talked about the persecution of Falun Gong, the practitioners of Falun Gong, and he also talked about the controversy surrounding Bodies the Exhibition. Sarah, have you been to Bodies the Exhibition?
I definitely have. I went about, I guess it was 3 weeks ago or so.
And what did you think?
Well, I don't necessarily have too big of a filter. So immediately when I went in there, I asked the direct question, where'd you get the bodies from? And I was sort of shuffled over to the side from the major group, and I was shown a plaque on the side of the wall by the security guard, and he basically just asked me to read the plaque and said that it should explain to me where the bodies came from. And on this little tiny gold plaque, it just said that any unidentified or unclaimed body in China is immediately donated to science to increase the general body of knowledge on bodies. So I was a little bit confused about this plaque and the fact that I wasn't explained anything more formally by an actual person. But so that was my first impression of Bodies exhibit. But other than that, I mean, the exhibit was pretty interesting. And I've never seen anything like it before. So it was interesting. However, definitely a little bit concerning initially there.